What do you think you're doing, Dave?
This is the Vinyl Garage.
And a one, and a two. There's a place where I can go, and that's where I wanna be. I'm saying goodbye to you good people, for I found a place for me. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Gonna go way out,
way out.
That's where the fun is, way out,
way out.
That's where the sun is, way out.
Welcome to the Vinyl Garage. I'm your host, Dave Nelson, and for the next 60 minutes, we will explore the vinyl history of rock and roll, zeroing in on the lesser-heard world of B-sides and album cuts, along with, at times, some not-so-subtle commentary, incorporating everything from the blues of the 30s to the rock and roll of today. This is the music we love. Let's give it the respect it deserves. In this week's Vinyl Garage, we'll explore the post-Beatle, new solo artist days of John, Paul, George, and Ringo, and how each of them dealt with their newfound freedom. I'm going out on a limb here, albeit a really strong limb, that I believe when the Beatles broke up, John was less confident he could continue without Paul than Paul believed he could without John. Paul's ego alone was greater than the rest of his mates combined, so it's especially ironic that his first post-Beatle LP was less than stellar. John's, on the other hand, although not genius by any means, was at least solid. But John's solo career began well before he was an unemployed Beatle, starting in 1968. He and the soon-to-be Mrs. Lennon released three experimental LPs, Unfinished Music 1 and 2, and The Wedding Album, that collectively infuriated fans, critics, record execs, and any record buyer with an opinion. And you know what they say about them, everybody's got one. And thanks to the explicitness of the first unfinished project, Two Virgins, John and Yoko's were clearly on display. The Two Virgins LP was nothing more than noise to Beatle fans who expected something new from one of their favorite artists, but what they got was tape loops, sound effects, and out-of-sync musical instruments. And thanks to the cover, which featured the two naked, EMI refused to distribute it. And when a distributor was found, it was released in a brown paper wrapper. Some jurisdictions confiscated it as obscene.
Yoko?
John?
Yoko?
John?
Yoko?
John!
Yoko!
John!
Yoko!
Unfinished number 2 and 3 fared no better, but as a positive, you could at least display the album cover in a record store.
Yoko!
The first proper album, one with actual music on it, was Live Peace in Toronto. The band, which was cobbled together very quickly, featured Eric Clapton, Klaus Voormann, and Alan White, along with John and Yoko. Side one consisted of 6 cuts, 3 classics, 2 newer Lennon, and 1 Beatle track. Side two was all Yoko, with the band desperately trying to keep a straight face. This is one album, when you find it, side two is always in perfect condition. The performance was lukewarm at best, mostly due to the fact that they had never played together as a band before, as John so eloquently announces.
Okay, we're just going to do numbers that we know, you know, because we've never played together before.
Well, it's a 1 for the money, 2 for the show, 3 to get ready now, go, get, go, don't.
Honey, lay off of them shoes. Don't you
car. Drink my liver from the old fruit jar. Do anything that you want to do. Uh-uh, honey, they hopper them too. Don't you for my persuasion. Well, you can do anything, but they hopper them persuasion.
But it's the first single by both John and Paul that proves my out on a limb theory. The Plastic Ono Band single Give Peace a Chance gives songwriting credits to Lennon and McCartney. Paul's Another Day awards royalties to himself and his wife Linda. John wouldn't make that mistake again. Here's both of the aforementioned 45s. Notice that when John is preachy and tries for something bigger than himself, Paul falls back to a Penny Lane, Eleanor Rigby-like track.
Sometimes she feels
was the first Beatle to quit the band back in 1968 during the White Album sessions, due in some part to a combination of Paul's overbearing attitude and the nearly constant presence of Yoko. He was, however, talked into returning 2 weeks later. John was next in September of 1969, but the breakup wouldn't be public knowledge until Paul announced he was leaving in April of 1970, a month after the release of Ringo's first solo LP, Sentimental Journey. The album's release date being before Paul's was a bone of contention between the two. Ringo's record would become the first conventional solo LP of the four, not including soundtracks, avant-garde, or experimental releases. An album of standards and favorites of his mother, Ringo crooned his way through the 12 cuts. Patching up his relationship with Paul, he recorded a McCartney-arranged Stardust for the album. Ringo would remain a neutral party in the ex-Beatles circus.
Sometimes I wonder why I spend the lonely of a song. The melody haunts my reverie, and I am once again with you. When our love was new, and each kiss an inspiration. Ago. Now my consolation is in the stardust of a song beside a garden wall where stars are bright. You are in my arms, the nightingale tells his fairy tale of paradise where roses grew. Though I dream in vain, in my heart it will remain. My stardust melody, the memory of love's refrain. The nightingale tells his fairy tale of paradise where roses grew. Though I dream in vain, in my heart it will remain. My stardust melody, the memory of love's refrain.
Ringo had always been a big fan of country music, so when the opportunity to record an album in Nashville presented itself, he flew to Tennessee. The sessions, engineered by ex-Elvis band Scotty Moore, produced an album and a single of the same name, Beaucoup's a Blues. Here's a good place to rewind a bit and compare the path the three Beatles we've covered so far had chosen to begin their life as solo artists. John took the political, social issue route. Paul just continued on as if nothing had changed. And Ringo, for the first time, did whatever he wanted. An album of songs his mom liked, an LP of country music that he loved. And most importantly, reviews and record sales didn't enter into the decision.
I left Louisiana. I had me big plans to go out and take me all over this land. To see me the world, I left my sweet girl and gave it a whirl. But now here I stand alongside the road with holes in my soul, in my shoes, and buku's the blue. Marsh by the breeze from the Gulf, I'm coming home.
Coming home,
I've had me enough. Oh, where are the things I saw in my dreams? Where's the happy the freedom should bring? I see me today and no yesterday, that I threw away my most precious things. I see me a man who's lonely, wants only to lose. Buku's the blue. Oh, sweet magnolia, breath carried over the marsh by a breeze from the Gulf, I'm coming home.
Coming home,
I've had me enough.
But the ex-fab that made the biggest post-Beatles splash was George, releasing out of the box the 3LP All Things Must Pass. No longer second fiddle to John and Paul, free of the album's song quotas that sanctioned his music, the album went number one worldwide and included two top 10 singles, My Sweet Lord and What Is Life. The latter coming up. But that's not his first solo project. In fact, there's two previous to All Things Must Pass. A Far Eastern-style soundtrack album for the film Wonderwall in 1968, and an electronic experimental LP centered around the then very new technology Moog 3-series synthesizer. Neither impressed anyone, although reception wasn't nearly as bad as what John and Yoko had to endure.
I can't say.
once again looking at how each Beatle chose to showcase their new solo career to the world, adding Mr. Harrison to the mix. We see music of some conviction. My Sweet Lord brings a mostly absent higher power to rock and roll. And What Is Life could be about a girl or a god, depending how you look at it. But George's next single, there was no ambiguity. It was a call for action and a cry for help. Bangladesh, rock's first charity record.
My friend came to me, sadness in his eyes, told me that he wanted help before his country dies. Although I couldn't feel the pain, I knew I had to try. Now I'm asking, help us save some life. Bangladesh,
to the Vinyl Garage.
I was a baby.
While John was forcing us to come along with him as he explores his heroin problem and his mom issues with respectively Cold Turkey and Mother, the former being the first single he took complete writer's credits and the latter the only single from the Plastic Ono Band LP. John was smart enough by this time to let Yoko do her thing only on the B-sides.
I never left you.
When Paul's hitting on all cylinders, it's a great thing. Unfortunately, he never thinks he's not. Example being the McCartney solo album from 1970. Already pissed that Ringo beat him to the first Beatle to release a solo album club, Paul still managed to beat Let It Be to the record stores, much to the displeasure of the other Fabs. His consternation over release dates was, in the long run, pointless. The record wasn't worth the argument, save for one cut, Maybe I'm Amazed. The song the earlier Hitting on All Cylinders reference was intended. It's unfortunate that he just didn't release it as a single with some throwaway B-side, and it's not that he didn't have a few of those laying around, and save the vinyl, cardboard, printing, and distribution cost of a full-length LP. Especially considering the quality of the rest of the record. It's also interesting to note that it's the only cut on the aforementioned LP that wasn't recorded at Paul's home on a portable tape machine. It was taped at Abbey Road. Paul gave up on the DIY method for his next LP, Ram, a record that didn't poll too highly at the time of release, but has grown on everyone, myself included. Recording it in a proper studio. From Ram, another Hitting on All Cylinders example, the UK-only single, Backseat of My Car. Seems Paul might be getting the hang of this solo thing.
Baby, I'm amazed the way you love me all the time. Maybe I'm afraid of the way I love you.
Baby, I'm a man.
Just when you thought it was safe to be seen leaving a record store with something new from Paul, there was Mary Had a Little Lamb. But I digress. Ringo's next move vinyl-y was two downright great records, 1971's It Don't Come Easy and 72's Back Off Boogaloo. Writer's credits for both were given to Ringo, although it's thought Harrison did most of the work. But as good as these two 7-inchers were, it was the snapshot into the post-Beatle world that they provided that really is the story here. And the B-side of It Don't Come Easy is example. First off, it's quite apparent that Harrison had little to nothing to do with writing early 1970. The song's simplicity says only Ringo, as he lays out his relationship with each of the other Beatles. George is always in town playing with him. John, when he comes to town, will play with him. And when Paul visits, he wonders if he will play with him. Far from a glowing review of his relationship with Paul, but it's the lyrics to Back Off Boogaloo where Ringo takes off the gloves. First off, Boogaloo was, at least according to some, the other Beatles' nickname for Paul. And as the title suggests, for him to back off. In this case, his legal activities against the other three. But Ringo doesn't stop there. He refers to Paul as Meathead, and that he shouldn't pretend that he is dead, telling him to get himself together and give him something tasty because everything he tries to do just sounds wasted. Not so pleasant take on the music Paul's been making. Here's both of those A-sides.
Thank you.
just because George Harrison was a spiritual person, a humanitarian friend of the dark horse everywhere, doesn't mean he's incapable of some artfully placed, sarcastic snark. Case in point, Sue Me, Sue You Blues from 1973's Living in a Material World LP. The song was the only secularly themed cut on the album. A perfectly good hour of your life you'll never get back spent listening to me. The Vinyl Garage applauds your discerning taste. Questions, comments, your undying allegiance, or outright disdain can be directed at vinylgarage@oh.rr.com or Facebook/Vinyl Garage Show. So until next time, this is Dave Nelson. As always, thanks for listening. Zero, next day, our business is in the middle of the century. Right, since you went out, zero, you know, she's your substance.